You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room is changing the way we talk sports. Happy Monday, everybody. Today, I want to cover certainly some NBA playoffs from the weekend, a surprising sweep, and a pick that I got completely wrong in the second round of the playoffs. So I want to talk a little bit about playoffs here later. I want to start today, though, by a conversation surrounding Timberwolves shot selection. And this is prompted by an article over at The Athletic by Seth Partnow, of course, the former director of basketball research, I believe was his title with the Milwaukee Bucks. And he used to write for Nylon Calculus over at Fansided, actually, which is also where my Dunking with Wolves site is part of. And now he's at The Athletic. And he wrote a fantastic article about the lost art of the inartful mid-range. So I want to dive into that and apply it to the Timberwolves here. And we'll do that next. The very first thing, just a couple of quick Wolves notes, and then we'll get into the shot selection thing. I think it's a really an interesting study. Basically, the premise is that star players are still shooting mid-range shots, and it's mostly okay, but it's the role players that aren't shooting them. And we can see that is the case with the Timberwolves. And I also think that mid-range jumpers are going to go up a little bit next year compared to the last couple of years under Ryan Saunders for the Timberwolves specifically. So I want to get into all that in just a second. First, though, as always, a quick reminder off the top, you can follow this podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. That includes Apple, Google, Spotify, and of course, the all-new Odyssey app. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Go ahead and give it a try if you haven't already. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at B Beacon, two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. All right, let's hit a couple of quick Wolves notes first. Number one, Dane Moore reported over the weekend on Saturday, I believe, that the Timberwolves are going to let go the Iowa Wolves coach, the head coach Sam Newman Beck, down in the G League after a couple of seasons. He was hired at the same time as Ryan Saunders. And I mean, if you look at it, clearly this is a case of Chris Finch wanting to build his own kind of coaching. I guess it's not technically part of his staff, but coaching tree, I guess, or coaching depth, beginning with the G League and all the way up through the NBA bench. And as far as we know, David Vanterpool and Brian Gates are the only NBA assistants on the Timberwolves that have been let go by the Wolves that we're aware of. And who knows, there could certainly be some additional changes coming. But it's interesting to me that they did just go ahead and make the move in the G League, because it's not like there hasn't been development with the players that have played there. Now, to be clear, they went 2-13 in the G League bubble this year. That's obviously not great. And they had some bad luck, though. They had a lot of close losses. They went 19-24 the year prior. So he had a very much a losing record in terms of his two seasons at the helm. But look at the players who played for him and how much better they got. Jalen Noel started 26 games last year for the Iowa Wolves and obviously improved and became better as a pro. I mean, you could say the same thing about Keelan Martin, who spent the entire season on a two-way deal with the Pacers, who were a playoff team in the East. He played in 23 games in the G League last year. Jordan McLaughlin, Naz Reid is maybe the most prominent example because of how good he's been at the NBA level. He started 16 games last year. He had Jared Vanderbilt briefly after the trade last season. This year was obviously really different. He didn't have anybody that also appeared in a game at the NBA level, except for Ashton Higgins, who I guess was on that roster before he was waived and appeared in two games with the Wolves. But besides him, there was nobody else that appeared in both places this year. And he did, though, coach Tyler Cook, and he coached Charlie Brown Jr., who both ended up signing NBA contracts. Tyler Cook had a monster start to the bubble and ended up on Brooklyn and then signing, I believe, a multi-year deal with the Detroit Pistons. So whatever role, and we don't really know what exact role Newman Beck had in the development of some of these guys, but he had some role, right, as the head coach of the G League team that they played on. And so it's interesting that they went ahead and made the move, although not shocking because, again, Chris Finch wants to build his own staff all the way down to the G League, apparently. So we'll see. what, you know, what comes of that role, what comes of the rest of the roles in Chris Finch's bench, but that'll be interesting to keep an eye on here moving forward. All right. Not much else Timberwolves news related going through the weekend. So let's go ahead and jump into the shot selection conversation. I'll introduce the concept here first before getting into the Wolves specific application. But Seth Partnow at The Athletic wrote an article about how the mid-range jumper, while it's still declining, there's plenty of high usage star caliber players who still have the mid-range shot as part of their arsenal, from Steph Curry to obviously Damian Lillard. I mean, guys like D'Angelo Russell is a really good example. Chris Paul, obviously, they're all players who shoot the ball frequently from the elbows and from a little bit further out, and it's part of their game. And they have enough success with it that obviously they're still impactful offensive players. So this article is all about, it's a really interesting concept, something I hadn't really considered, which is essentially overlaying usage rate over shot location frequency across the board, across the entire NBA. And Partnow starts with the premise that mid-range jumpers are continuing to go down, and they are. He's got the data, and the biggest decline was from the 17-18 to 18-19 season, but we're still at roughly 31% of overall shots, 31.4% last season attempted from the mid-range. Mid-range jumpers have been going down basically since the hand-checking rules were changed. What was that? 16, 17 years ago now. And other than a couple of bumps, I mean, almost every single year they've gone down with 3-point attempts going up. And now we're at a point where 3-point attempts have surpassed mid-range attempts. But it's the mid-range attempts aren't being siphoned off from the star players. They're not that there's Kobe's and Michael Jordan's who only shoot, Kevin Garnett's that only shoot mid-range jumpers. It's that the star players are genuinely scoring from all levels of the floor, and the role players just aren't shooting mid-range jumpers. And it goes back to timing and spacing and offenses being a little bit more efficient now, actually a lot more efficient now than they used to be. So I want to get into that next. So what that looks like for the Timberwolves and which players, you know, how much does the Wolves roster fit this overlay of usage rate versus shot location if we look at last season? And how much could that and has it changed under Chris Finch versus under Ryan Saunders? So that's what I want to get into next year. Before we do that, though, let's talk about our friends at Indeed. You're the hiring expert for your company, and what you really need is help making your short list of quality candidates. You need a hiring partner who helps make your life easier. You need Indeed. Indeed is the job site that makes hiring as easy as 1, 2, 3. Post, screen, and interview all on Indeed. Get your quality short list of candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job description faster. Only pay for the candidates that meet must-have qualifications, and schedule and complete video interviews in your Indeed dashboard. Indeed makes connecting with and hiring the right talent fast and easy. With tools like Indeed Instant Match, giving you quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your job description immediately, and Indeed skills tests that, on average, reduce hiring time by 27%. You can choose from more than 130 skills tests, then add your must-have requirements so you only pay for applications that meet them. According to Talent Nest, Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. If you're hiring, you need Indeed. Get started right now with a free $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/locked. Get a $75 credit at Indeed.com/locked. Indeed.com/locked. Offer valid through June 30th. Terms and conditions apply. Let's also talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar of all time, hands down. Tastes exactly like a candy bar. If you think you know what protein bars taste like, but you haven't tried Built Bar, I'm sorry, but you've been thinking wrong. You need to try Built Bar. Again, it tastes like a candy bar. It doesn't taste like a protein bar. There's 9 delicious flavors. You can choose from coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie, which is my personal favorite, peanut butter brownie, double chocolate and salted caramel. There's something for everyone. If you have not tried all the flavors, get a mix box. You'll get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. That's the best way to go. Most flavors have 17 grams of protein, but they only have 130 calories, only 4 grams of sugar, and just 4 grams net carbs. Go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your first order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, let's go ahead and jump into the Timberwolves and mid-range jumpers. So I want to focus in, technically, when Partnow's article, it's not just non-paint twos when he's talking about mid-range jumpers. He's talking about really anything outside of 3 feet from the rim. As you know, basically, unless it's a restricted area shot, it becomes a mid-range jumper, which includes floaters, et cetera, in that jumble. I'm going to take out the 3 to 10 foot because I think there's enough noise there with offensive rebounding and some of the lower usage guys. Just like everybody's kind of in the same range there from like, I don't know, 12 to 20% of their shots coming, basically the whole roster is in that range. So I think we start to see some separation when you get to 10 feet and out. So we'll look at the 10 to 16 foot data. According to Basketball Reference, what they say is the percentage of field goal attempts by distance, 10 to 16 feet, excuse me, and then also 16 feet to the 3-point line. So the longer twos, which are generally considered and for good reason, the worst shots on the floor. So looking at the Wolves roster, field goal attempts from 10 to 16 feet. Here are the top attempters of shots, I guess, from that range. Ricky Rubio's first. He attempted 13.1% of his shot attempts this year from 10 to 16 feet. Then Jalen Noel, 12.5% of his shots. And then D'Angelo Russell, 12.4% of his shots. Nobody else, there's a big drop. Nobody else attempted more than 7.5% of their shots from there. Malik Beasley would be next on the list, followed by Towns, Jade McDaniels, Anthony Edwards. So 10 to 16 feet wasn't a very popular place to shoot the basketball in the Timberwolves offense last year. And it doesn't surprise me that Rubio leads the way, followed by Jalen Noel and followed by D'Angelo Russell. So this doesn't necessarily follow the theory by Partnow that star players are still shooting mid-range jumpers because Ricky Rubio is not a star offensive player. But he's also been pretty good from this range in the past. This year, he was not good. He shot 41.5%, which isn't horrendous, but it's not good if you're shooting mid-range jumpers from 10 to 16 feet. But last year, he was 48.9% there from there with the Suns. 48.9% from 10 to 16 feet. So not only was last season with Phoenix an outlier for Rubio in terms of three-point shooting percentage, his career high, it was also his career high from 10 to 16 feet. And he shot, almost the exact same percentage of his shots from that range as this year as he did with Phoenix last year. He just shot 7.4% worse from that range. So if Rubio is shooting 49% like he did last year, that's not a bad shot. It's when we get down closer to 40% when it starts to look not nearly as appealing. Jalen Noel, we've talked about this on the show before. He's a good mid-range shooter. He likes to shoot mid-range jumpers. He was actually 61.9% from this range, from 10 to 16 feet this year. It's a relatively small sample. He only played in 42 games, then he got hurt. But 62% from 10 to 16 feet is fantastic, and it makes a ton of sense. D'Angelo Russell's next, and it may not surprise you to find out that he actually had his career worst year shooting from 10 to 16 feet. He shot only 34.6% from that range, which is a lot worse than Ricky Rubio. And not what you want to see. It wasn't actually his career worst, but it was his worst since his second year in the league with the Lakers, his rookie season with the Lakers. So his worst in 6 years. And I mean, last year from that range, he shot 42%. The year before that with Brooklyn, he was over 50%. His first year in Brooklyn, he was 46.7%. All numbers that you know, we could live with. But 34.6% when he's shooting, you know, a decent chunk of his shots, 12% of his shots from that range, it's not great. And I think it's fair to say that that's at least partly an outlier. How much of that was pre-injury? I guess we could go in and look at his the date range there and see what his shooting percentage from that range was pre-surgery and post-surgery. He was much better across the board post-surgery this year. So I'm sure that plays into it to some extent. But we could see that as a little bit of an outlier for D'Angelo Russell. If we go up to the next range, 16 feet out to the three-point line, Russell's the only one that shot more than 7% of his shots from long two range. 16.1% of Russell's shots were from between 16 feet and the three-point line. That's his biggest area of shot attempts outside of three. So most of Russell's twos, or I should say the area where he shot the most of his twos, was from long range, from long two territory, 16 feet to the three-point line. 16.1% of his shots from there, and he shot 41.9% from that range. That number I think you could stomach that number, but it's not what you want, because how many of those could you just take a couple steps backward and shoot the same clip if you're D'Angelo Russell and get an extra point, right? Last year, he was 51.7% from that range, but before that, he was hovering in the 41 to 45% mark. So for his career, he's 42.3% on long twos. He was just a shade below that this year at 41.9. So for D'Angelo Russell, we can say that those, that 10 to 16 foot, that was a little bit of an outlier. He's great from the elbows. He has been throughout his career. For his career, he's 42.3% from there. So the 34% this season from 10 to 16 feet is something of an outlier. D'Angelo Russell's not going to take that shot out of his game. What he could take out of his game is the long twos. Make those elbow jumpers, make those, you know, turn those into floaters, get a little bit closer to the rim, or shoot threes. D'Angelo Russell is really the only one that had this issue with long twos this year. Nobody else attempted more than 7.2% of their shots from 16 feet out to the three-point line. That includes Jalen Noel. Anthony Edwards were both right at the 7%. Ricky Rubio. And then Malik Beasley was at 5% of his shots from that spot on the floor, as was Karl-Anthony Towns. But you know what we're not seeing? And this goes back to Partnow's article. We're not seeing the role players with high instances of mid-range jumpers. Jalen Noel would be the exception, but that's also just kind of his player profiles. He's going to be that microwave, that instant offense off the bench type of a player, and that's going to be his role moving forward. And while not a star, he's got that star capability on offense in terms of just getting buckets from anywhere on the floor. So that's he's the exception here. But it's D'Angelo Russell, it's Malik Beasley, it's Anthony Edwards. Those are the three guys that are in the top five on both lists. Ricky Rubio as well, because again, that's just always been a part of his game. However, what I do want to point out, though, is that his three-point rate, Rubio's three-point rate, was way up this season. He attempted far more threes than he ever has before. 43% of Rubio's shot attempts were from three. Unfortunately, he didn't make them at the clip that he did last year in Phoenix. But every other year in his career, he shot a great chunk of his shot attempts from beyond 16 feet inside the arc, including last year in Phoenix. He was at about 17% of his shots were from that range. This year, that was down to 7%, which was by far a career low in terms of long two-pointers from Ricky Rubio. So he's scooting those in. He's shooting more 10 to 16 footers. He's shooting more threes. And that's just been the breakdown of his shots. So while he still is in the top five in the team in terms of long mid-range twos, he is shooting less than he did previously. But the other role players, they're nowhere to be found on these lists. Jane McDaniels, Jake Lehman, Josh Okogie, Jarrett Culver, Jordan McLaughlin, Naz Reid, Jared Vanderbilt, Juancho Hernan Gomez. Those guys don't shoot mid-range jumpers. In fact, Juancho combined between 10 to 16 feet and 16, he didn't shoot a single shot beyond 16 feet that wasn't a three. Juancho didn't. Not really a surprise. Naz shot one all season. Juancho shot one shot from 10 to 16 feet all season. So to Partnow's point, the role players are not shooting mid-range jumpers. They're not shooting non-paint twos very frequently for the Timberwolves. I mean, it's the shot makers. It's D'Angelo Russell. It's, to a lesser extent, Malik Beasley. It's Jalen Noel, who that's going to be his game as a shot maker. But all of the role players are outside that you know, top five, top six, even Anthony Edwards. And he's not a role player. He's the one of the high usage guys, but 42.9% of his shot attempts are threes, and 30% of his shot attempts are coming at the rim. And basically the rest of them are between 3 and 10 feet. So his shot profile is extremely modern looking, whereas D'Angelo Russell's is much more of a, hey, I'm comfortable shooting from the elbows and I can make those shots. And the next question is, how does this evolve under Chris Finch? I think there's probably going to be a few more mid-range jumpers shot under Chris Finch. And I think that's because of the way that his offense is going to operate, with multiple versions and twists on horn sets, with kind of mid-pick and rolls, with Towns operating in the mid-post. And if you look at Towns' shot profile, I mean, he was fifth on the team in terms of his percentage of shots being attempted from 10 to 16 feet, and sixth in 16 feet out to the three-point line. You look at Towns' career, though, and it's not... Now, remember, I mean, Finch was only his coach for a chunk of the season. It's not like he was the head coach for the whole season, or that Towns was even healthy for the whole season. But if you look at Towns' shot chart, this year was not out of line from his career. In fact, he was below his career averages in terms of the shots he was taking from 10 to 16 feet and 16 to the three-point line. But he was up from last year under Ryan Saunders. So if we're comparing this, the Saunders era to the Finch era, we're going to see Towns shooting more mid-range jumpers under Finch than he did under Saunders. In fact, I mean, you go back to the Tibbs years with Towns, and he was still attempting roughly 15% of his shots from that 10 foot to three-point line range. I think we're going to see a return to that for Towns, and I don't think it's the worst thing. I mean, he's a good shooter from that area on the floor. He's generally a little less efficient from there, obviously, than he is from outside the arc. But if the Wolves are going to run some of these mid-post actions and run some maybe pin downs where Towns can pop up beyond the arc, similar actions to what the Wolves would run with Kevin Love and Ricky Rubio and Kevin Martin back under Rick Adelman, where they can essentially invert a pin down screen and allow Towns to pop up beyond the arc like they did with Kevin Love and get some open threes. I would imagine some more of those actions come out of Towns in the mid post. I would imagine that there's some, you know, Towns and Naz Reid or, you know, depending on what happens in terms of if they're able to acquire another big that could play with Towns. You know, I talked about Miles Turner last week. That's a pie in the sky thing probably. But could the Wolves pair another big with Towns and run more of those types of actions? Or maybe it's Jaden McDaniels and they just run more big pick and rolls or again, more horn sets, things like that, where they can do so many different creative things out of it. And this isn't going to be apples to apples from what Finch did in New Orleans or what Finch did in Denver. But in both places, if you look at what he did in New Orleans, which was a lot of creative activity with both bigs, with both DeMarcus Cousins and Anthony Davis, and what he did with Jokic in Denver very early in Jokic's career, there's a lot of creative ways that he's used talented and versatile bigs throughout his coaching career. And I want to dive into that a little bit more this week. I wrote a piece at Dunkey with Wolves arguing for Miles Turner as a great fit for the Timberwolves, which, you know, on its face maybe isn't obvious to some people because he's a center and Towns is a center, but I think the fit would be perfect. And I don't want to only talk about Miles Turner because, again, pie in the sky is maybe a little bit of a pessimistic way to put it, but why would that work for the Timberwolves? So I want to talk later this week about what Finch did in New Orleans specifically and some of the things he did with Cousins and Davis and why that could be a match in Minnesota. And some of it could even work with Naz Reid or Jaden McDaniels, but why another big wouldn't be the worst thing to add to the mix in Minnesota. So that'll be a focus here later this week. I think that'll be a good conversation to have. Okay. Next, what I want to do is I want to talk NBA playoffs real briefly. I want to talk about what happened over the weekend, the series that ended, what to look forward to in the other series. So we're going to get to all that next. First, though, let's talk about our friends at BetOnline. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing. You can track all the action at betonline.ag. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. This is your chance to get into the game. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Again, that promo code's locked on. So promo code locked on to get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. All right, let's take a quick spin through the weekend and reset where we're at with the playoffs. Going all the way back to Friday, the Sixers took a 2-1 series lead by beating the Hawks, and the Suns took a 3-0 lead at the time by beating the Nuggets. Neither game was particularly close. And then on Saturday, we just had the one game. The Clippers won, frankly, a must-win game. They dominated the Jazz, pulled away late in the game against Utah on Saturday night. And without Mike Conley, the Jazz are really, they're starting to struggle. I mean, they obviously were up 2-0, a pretty commanding 2-0 lead, but they need Mike Conley to get back and get back healthy. That was clear after Saturday's game, and we'll see the next step in that series this evening. And then on Sunday, the Bucks beat the Nets and now have evened that series at 2. And Kyrie Irving hurt his ankle in that game. Giannis had another monster game, 34-12 for Giannis. Durant had another decent game, 28-13, but he was just 1-8 on threes, 9-25 shooting. And PJ Tucker had a second consecutive game, really third consecutive game, where he defended him extremely well and aggressively. He ended up drawing 5 fouls in just 29 minutes. Tucker did, and probably could have been called for more. But he did his part to slow down Durant. And with Kyrie only playing 17 minutes, had the rolled ankle, the Nets didn't have anybody else scoring double figures. Durant had 28, Irving had 11. Nobody else had more than 8. And they just didn't get help. Their depth, you know, Blake Griffin's been great for them, but he's not the Blake Griffin that we know and love from several years ago. It's been something of a resurgence, but he's not going to put up 20-10 very often. The Bucks, for their part, they had a big defensive game from Tucker, a big all-around game from Giannis. He was really efficient in this game, 14-26 shooting. Chris Middleton was really good as well. Jrue Holiday continues to be great defensively. And of course, his job got a lot easier when Kyrie went down. So that series is now evened at 2 games apiece. And the crowds in Milwaukee have been great. And my pick of Brooklyn in 6, Feels pretty good right now. I think obviously Milwaukee's gained some momentum, and Brooklyn dealing with the injuries isn't ideal for them. But that series is all knotted up at two, which is going to be a ton of fun, and that should be a fun series. So I'm glad that it didn't turn into a blowout series, a 4-0 or a 4-1 situation, which, speaking of, unfortunately, that did happen in the West. And I say unfortunately because, again, I'm just rooting for good series. That's where I'm at here. I don't really care. I don't have a dog in this fight. I don't really care who's winning each of these series. I just want good basketball. I want game sixes and game sevens. And we did not get that in the West for Phoenix and Denver. And my pick was woefully wrong. I picked Denver in seven. This thing got done in four. Phoenix swept them relatively easily. I mean, there was nothing about this series that ever felt close. Denver was technically in this game throughout, but Jokic was ejected in the third quarter on, I'm going to say, here's the thing. I'm sure at this point you've seen the Jokic play. I understand why Jokic was ejected. I understand that there was a windup, et cetera. However, I think context has to matter. And I know that it's not supposed to. It's supposed to be, you know, the clear lines between a foul, not a foul, a flagrant, not a flagrant, a flagrant one, and a flagrant two. But we've seen all season and every season, there's always gray area. There's always gray area with all this stuff. It's subject to whoever's making the call on the floor and then also in the replay center, ultimately. I think context has to matter. And I know it's impossible to legislate intent, but everyone could see that this was a frustration foul from Jokic. He does this stuff all the time. He gets mad and he tries to swipe the ball away, and he doesn't care if he commits a foul. Towns does this stuff all the time. And I guess they're trying to get these guys to not have the windup, because I guess if he's, you know, a couple, you know, an inch to the side a little bit more, maybe he breaks his nose or whatever. Like, I guess I get that. But to eject the league MVP in a game four, on a frustration foul that very clearly wasn't trying to start anything. And I've complained about how Jokic complains all the time on this show. And it's in my opinion, worse than Towns, but that doesn't mean that the league MVP should be ejected on a frustration foul. To me, that was frustrating to see it end that way. And Denver probably wasn't going to win this game. I know they ended up only losing by seven, and they had a strong close. Well, I shouldn't say a strong close. They had a strong first part of the fourth quarter and were in this thing until the last few minutes before the Suns really pulled away. And it probably wasn't, I guess I wouldn't consider it that close the way that the Suns pulled away at the end, but the Nuggets were within a couple of possessions midway through the fourth quarter. But Chris Paul had his highest scoring game. I think I saw it was in almost 3 years. He had 37 points on 14 of 19 shooting, ultra efficient, 9 of 9 from the free throw line, didn't attempt a single three-pointer, 7 assists, only 2 turnovers, was fantastic in this game. They also got another great game for Devin Booker, which is just par for the course now, 34 points, 11 rebounds for Book. And I mean, the Suns are just a machine right now, which is, I mean, they had such a great start to the season, a little bit of a hiccup midseason, the Chris Paul injury first round, and things looked like they could... obviously facing the Lakers, things looked like they could be, it could come to a pretty disappointing close for Phoenix. But I mean, sweeping Denver was not something that I had on my like top 100 list of top 100 possibilities for this series. But here we are. They swept the Denver Nuggets and they're going to be in the Western Conference Finals. And kudos to Monty Williams, who, by the way, was my pick for Coach of the Year. He did not win the award. It went to Tom Thibodeau. I think Monty Williams should have won the award. Obviously Tibbs had a great season with the Knicks. But Monty Williams and the Suns just keep winning. And it feel good for Devin Booker, who's been much maligned in the past, and for Chris Paul, who's obviously done a ton for that team in terms of, obviously, right, in terms of getting them from where they were to where they are now and making that little final jump. So they look to be really impressive right now. We'll see who comes out of the Utah-LA series, but the Western Conference Finals are going to be a lot of fun. Tonight, on Monday night, we've got Philadelphia and Atlanta game four, and then Utah and the Clippers game four. Philly's up 2-1 in their series. Utah's up 2-1. So both games are on TNT on Monday night. So we'll talk about those on Tuesday. And again, later this week, I want to get back into the Chris Finch offense with the New Orleans Pelicans. I did a deep dive on that for Dunkey with Wolves, and I've got a lot to talk about in terms of what he did with the New Orleans Pelicans, what he did with Cousins and Davis specifically, what he might want to do in Minnesota if they're able to get another big to play alongside Towns, and the difference between what Finch wants to do related to playing big and how Saunders wanted to play small. And interesting to me how that philosophy shift from a coaching perspective is going to be very clear. And Gerson Rosas has been in charge of it all and went along with the small ball thing and now is going to go along with the Finch larger lineups thing. And that's obviously oversimplifying it a little bit, but I don't think that that's not true. I think that there's a very clear line between how Saunders wanted to play and how Finch wants to play. And yet Rosas is the architect of this roster and they're going to have to make this work moving forward. So anyway, that's all we have for you today here on the show. Thanks again for listening to the Lockdown Wolves podcast. A reminder that you can follow the podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts on Apple, Google, Spotify, and the all new Odyssey app. You can also follow on Twitter at Lockdown T Wolves and at B Beacon. B Beacon is two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. A reminder that the Locked On Wolves podcast is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. The Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. This episode was brought to you by Locker Room. Download the Locker Room app from the iOS App Store and find one of our Locked On rooms. Locker Room is changing the way that we talk sports. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time. Today on the Locked On Today podcast, can the Clippers follow in the Bucks' footsteps? Get more of the sports news you need in less time with the Locked On Today podcast. Follow Locked On Today on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to podcasts.